The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Right on the firing! Solo to pick it. Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, gee whiz. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
The skipper goes and goes and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we are in our third grand final in 4 years.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, this, I mean, all the whole journey has been incredible. Like, you know, from beating Geelong in that qualifying final, coming from behind against Geelong in last year's preliminary final. But, oh, I think, was this the hardest one? It felt like the hardest one.
It's sort of funny, the history of it. It's almost like we had to do it a different way this time. It's like, you know, in the past times we've, you know, always won the qualifying final and always, you know, played at the MCG. And now we've won on the road, you know, we played in the second week of the finals. Like, it's almost like it was too easy the other way. Now we had to take a different path.
I know. The computer game just keeps getting up and up a level in difficulty. You know, it wasn't enough to go on the road and win a final last year. This year, you're going to have to go on the road for 15 weeks at a time to win a premiership.
I mean, what a game.
Yeah. So with shout out to the great Sir Swamp Thing on Twitter, but this is one of only around, I think it's 10 games in AFL history where both teams have kicked the same number of goals in each quarter. It's just, it was so excruciatingly close the whole way.
And a really strange game statistically. If you do the expected shots, we won by 3 goals, but we comfortably lost the inside 50s and we lost the meters gained. Like it's a really, really different kind of game.
Mm. Do you know where we were?
I've watched the game 3 times and I'm still not sure what happened.
We went into the phone booth and we didn't get intimidated. If anything, we were the intimidators in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've seen the memes, Nick, and I'm sure most listeners have, of the moment where Dersma, my favourite one is where someone superimposed a premiership cup over the football when Dersma drops the mark, and so Dersma drops the premiership. But yeah, they did. Like, there's a moment, Nick, and I think we're both emotional from watching the replay, but I was just watching, there was about 5 minutes to play, and Nank's just given away a free kick to Ebert, and he's so tired he has to punch the ground to get himself off. Like he can't get himself up with the legs. It takes every bit of willpower just to get on his feet. And then 30 seconds later, he actually gets the intercept. He doesn't take the mark, but he gets the ball from the next kick. He just wills himself to that next contest. And then he wins multiple tap outs. He has intercept marks after that. He's just like, I mean, you knew I was going to talk about this early, but like, I was genuinely in tears watching Nank's effort. It was just amazing.
It was immense. Lost. Look, if he was a racehorse, we'd say that we'd prepared him for a 3,200 meter race. Like He actually only came out at about 70% game time, which may well have been less than what we were planning. But I think we had trouble getting him back on the ground in the second quarter. So He was pretty fresh, and he was taking names particularly in the last quarter. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, and every time we went out of the midfield, our centre clearances weren't as good. I mean, we beat them comfortably in the clearances, but it was a 2-1 advantage in centre square clearances. Was that right?
Yep. Yeah. So 11-4 in centre square clearances. Compared that to last time we played Port Adelaide, it was 41-29 in favour of Port.
Right. Yeah, and overall clearances. Yeah, and you know, obviously, this is with Shedder and Prestia back, but God, like, I mean, that just. That Nank was, by the way, on the champion data ratings, by far the best player on the ground. I'll throw an AFL rating. Dusty was. I'm comfortable. Mm. If you want to make the argument for Dusty, I'm fine with that. But yeah, just it was a blessing in disguise, I think, if that in the second when he couldn't get back in because I'm not saying he won the game, but I mean, as much as a ruckman can win a game without kicking a goal, he did.
Yeah. And look, the Port Adelaide Rucks were well on top in the first half. I think at one stage.
Oh, yeah, well, at three-quarter time, as I pointed out, Nank had one hit-out to advantage.
Mm. Yeah, it was 18-4 in the hit-outs at one stage. But, yeah.
He just got five in the last quarter. And he would have had six. Prestia dropped an absolutely beautiful one, and Prestia fumbled it out of bounds.
Yeah. I thought it was... the performance of a really mature team, like who knew what they were trying to do. Like they knew how hard it was going to be, and I love the way they would come together in their little huddles after each goal. Like just, you know, us against the world, big crowd, bang for blood. Yeah, and they got it done.
Incredible. Like, just, I mean, what a team. And what did you, like, it was clearly a meters game and a territory battle which in some ways they won, but we played better overall. Do you think we played better when it was wetter or drier, Nick? There was an idea that Simon Wallace had that actually we started playing better when it was dry. I think the fourth was the driest quarter. A quarter in which we did come from behind in, but you know, as you point out, it's really hard to make a definitive statement about the game because it was so tight and it just came down to who took their chances inside 50 sometime.
Well, we did have six more scoring shots, so that
And that's isn't that fascinating, Nick? Because we lost the inside 50s in every quarter. The final total was 59-44, and we lost the meters gained. Like, isn't that interesting?
Well, I think part of the story is as simple as having dangerous marking targets forward, with particularly Lynch, Jack, Dusty's beautiful, barely contested mark against Bryn Jones. Whereas, you know...
Oh, my God, Nick, honestly, you know, you played in the back pocket a bit, but you could have done a better... You could have done a better job with that contest against Dusty than Bryn Jones did. That was horrendous.
Yeah, but I would have... I would have Brown underpanted it as much as he did.
Exactly what happened. I love that description. I think it was a Bob Murphy who described it, that, you know, he's not that big a guy, but when he's coming down toward walking towards you inside 50, he looks 6'5" and weighs 120 kilos. And that's exactly what Bryn Jones did. Dusty had him beaten before he had to do anything.
I know. And at the other end, you know, Marshall did a few good things, but wasn't really dangerous as a marking target inside forward 50. Dixon was beaten all night by Bolter, with shouts to the Mars Bolter appreciations guys on Twitter.
Yeah, I did like that BDSM cosplay that Noah Bolter performed on Charlie Dixon. Charlie's obviously a sub, but that's okay. He kicked a nice goal in the end.
Yeah, it was a nice kick. But yeah, they were having to kick long goals all night because they were they were generating no contested one-on-one marks closer to goals because our defensive structure was good, but and our defenders were winning one-on-one.
Yeah, how did you feel about Tom Lynch loose man in defence?
Oh, when
I liked it when he took the mark.
There was a split second when the Port Adelaide player kicked it off the ground, and the camera just didn't quite pan left quick enough. I think partly because I was having an adrenaline surge, and I couldn't see where the ball was going, and until it landed on Lynch's chest. But oh, I loved it in the moment.
Yeah, and like there was a moment where it's funny, it's like, you know, like the sophistication of modern AFL, they'd be doing 50 things that, you know, most people, including us, couldn't possibly imagine. And yet at the end of the game, Dimmer basically just sent, mate, just get everyone go back. Like you could see him waving it. Like that's what they did. They kept, to their credit, they kept one or two guys forward to kick to. One of whom was Dusty at times, but yeah, they just like sending Tommy Lynch back. That is, we do not want a contested mark taken in our back 50, which is they didn't need to worry about it because an ankle's there. But I guess there's a lot of turf in the inside 50, and they're worried what an ankle might just once not get to a contest like he did for the entire last quarter. Sorry, can I just fanboy on Nank? I just think I want to get on the record that Nank. Nank has taken the pressure up championship belt from Jack Graham and led the team with 54 and had 10 tackles.
Which is a big number. And look, Jack Graham didn't go quietly. He had 50 himself. Yeah. It was a really willing, physical game. Like I thought Marlon Pickett on the wing in this game was the absolute antithesis of the Aaron Fiora type wingman. Like, you know, you're only coming off the edge of the square so you can get a bit of a run up when you hit the contest hard. Like, it was such a physical, relentless game across the four quarters. I actually have in my notes, hot early, comma. Hot late, hot in the middle.
Yes, he did. Like, you could see the nerves for the first time. Like, he's just played enough footy now that he knows enough to be scared. The nerves were on early. And I remember, you know, you probably remember they did two. He did two reasonably bad fumbles, which the commentators pointed out. But he grabbed the ball. It just went out of bounds. But he ran. He straight lined the ball and grabbed it. And he didn't fumble it. And I thought, right, he's okay now. He's got the feel. He's got the footy. He's not one grabbing. And look, for the whole rest of the game, he was a very solid contributor. And you know, while we're on the wings, like Caps's work in the last, like he was important as a release guy. And he was the one who kicked it to Jack to who set up the go, you know, the Jack free kick that was the winning point in inverted commas.
winning those K-Mac, winning those one-on-one contests. Yeah, it was a fantastic game.
They both had 13 possessions and were in the upper half of ratings on champion data, which you only get when you're a mid if you do an awful lot of one percenters and other and defensive acts.
Yep. Yeah, and as usual, all the usual suspects are right up there in having run super hard. Pickett, Broad, Rioli. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was mentally saying goodbye to Nathan Broad, and look, some other club may still offer him more money than we can afford to keep him. But yeah, he was another one. He was just so solid and reliable all night.
Yeah, I had a good feeling about him coming in. Like, you know, you knew it was going to be wet. You knew it was going to be hot, and he never does anything. Like, he's got no tricks, right? But he also never makes a mistake. Well, that's not that's manifestly untrue, but it's not. He very, very rarely makes a mistake.
Hmm. Yeah, he plays. He's learned how to play within his limitations. Playing next to Dave Asprey's been good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave's ruck work is, yeah, like it's not. We really miss Nank when he's not rucking, but it was adequate. And funny is, Noah, it was really interesting, wasn't it? They gave Noah the job against my wishes. And actually, at three-quarter time, I was thinking, oh, my God, we might lose a preliminary final because we're losing the ruck battle so badly. Because we were at the time. obviously, history, Nank made sure that didn't happen. But, yeah, it's interesting. Like, Noah Bolter has taken Dave Astrobury's job almost, don't you think?
Oh, I think, well, yeah, normally Asprey would be first choice on Dixon, but yeah,
I think the sequence of events is they think the more important thing is getting that back line role right. So I think the sequence of events is we put the best person to play on Dixon and then the other one plays in the ruck, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And look, even the magical piece of coaching, sending Bolter forward as well.
Imagine that. If we didn't love, if we didn't all have a man crush on Bolter already, imagine he kicked that goal. Nick, did you enjoy BT calling him as a lovely long left foot kick? Because, like, BT faking knowledge, because is he just seen him do a left foot kick?
Yeah, he is surprisingly two-sided. The kick for goal was unconvincing, but yeah, it was pretty much his only blemish on the night.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, could we love the kit after the video the club did and all the sort of people talking about what the skip's like and Brando sort of almost crying in the video. I got emotional watching it. I think I love Cochin even more. Like, you wouldn't have thought it'd be possible after 250 games, captain of multiple premierships, best and fairest Brownlow. But yeah, that was a big week for Cochin, and that sort of erased the one stain on his record, which is the Port final. And I mean, my God, what a leader!
Yeah, 7 intercepts, and just relentless work rate across 4 quarters. Our forwards, as I said, look, their defence played pretty well. You know, Lynch missed a couple of marks you'd probably normally take, but if we could break even out of the middle, that was going to be a long way to winning. And you know, as it turns out, winning the clearances and just not letting them impose themselves on us. It was huge.
It was. I mean, just well done to us again for adjusting. And God help anyone who tries to write an article about why Richmond is good or the Richmond way, because there is not a Richmond way. I mean, there are certain things we do every time, but, you know, we've just won 2 weeks in a row killing it out of the center square, something that has been a terrible weakness all year. It's just so hard to simplify or this team. And Nick, AFL ratings, Dusty, as our show rating, I think he's now BOG in what, 7 of these last 10 finals? how good was that shot in the first? Running away, the first goal of the game, actually, sorry. Yeah. Just over his shoulder, running away from it, angles all crap. And
wet football, it's a cake of soap. Yeah. Never going to miss. And yeah, the sheer dominance of his second goal. He worked hard over 4 quarters. And yeah, just things. It looked like something was going to happen whenever he went near the ball.
Yeah. And look, I know it was only a 6 possession game, but honestly, anyone who says that Jack Rimwald should retire can just get stuffed.
Absolutely. Just such a such a selfless game.
There were goals, like in the first, there were goals where I actually thought, oh, that was another time where Lynch split the pack. Actually, it was Jack a couple of times where we got a goal off a crumb. And that goal the point late in the game, it was probably a bit of foxing. I'm not sure it should have been a free kick.
The way it ended up, McKenzie's face to face with Jack going for the football. You're always in a world of trouble when you're not looking at the football.
And Jack grabbed him on the way down. But I was worried.
World of trouble.
Just tangenting on the onto the umpire slightly. I was really worried we're going to be into the bad hometown kicking, and we lost the free kick count. Mm. And you know they got that big goal in the first from a Vossi free kick. But we just got the Hartlett out of bounds on the full, and Hamish Hartlett. This is why when you're a mediocre player, you don't trash talk. If you, as from The Wire, if you're in a Wire fan, if you come at the King, you best not miss. And yep. Hamish Hartlett came at Omar, and he went home in a metaphorical body bag.
I actually thought the umpiring was pretty consistent all night.
They just weren't calling freeze, and that's fine.
They were red hot on deliberate out of bounds, but
At least they're consistent, and they gave the key one, which was the Lambert free. Like that, you had to call that based on rest of the game.
Mm. Oh yeah, absolutely. And look, I loved the moment when the umpire called out. I think it was Rosie saying, "When you exaggerate it, it's hard to tell if it's a free kick."
Yeah, nice one. Yeah. But I was just going to say, but back to that Jack, that shot and the point. Okay, yes, it's obvious it's every player in that position would try and have a set shot. It was good that the umpire let him do it because a lot oftentimes from outside 50, they say, no, just play on. But I love the fact that he knew exactly what to do, which was he didn't, a lot of players in that situation would freeze and bomb to the top of the square after they pretended to take a set shot, but he knew exactly what he needed to do. He knew the point was important, and he knew he wanted the defense to set up, and he thumped the crap out of it. And Jack does have he has a normal goal kicking motion, and he has a long kick goal kicking motion, and he just, even though he's 32 years old and he was tired, it was the end of the game, he had the leg to make it because he made it on the full. I think they just touched it as it went over the line.
Yeah, but
there was no way that wasn't going to score.
No, it was a huge. That was. I was convinced that we were going to get Mundied all throughout the last quarter until we got 6 points ahead. That was a huge point. I'm just glad Tom Lynch had the courage to go on after Xavier Desma. Got into him at that after he kicked that goal. Like it just must have been destroying to be verbally abused by someone as well respected as him.
In fairness, Nick, I think the sequence of events was Tom Lynch ran over 100 meters to tell Xavier Desma he's a wanker, and then that started it all.
May have been the case, but Desma was kicking for goal. It was a bit of a It was a look.
It was a bit of a power move too, because we were losing. I think we were losing at the time, weren't we? And
it tied the score.
Yeah, and anyway, but Tommy, that's like Tommy Lynch, and the guys just kicked a goal. But that's like Tommy Lynch saying, "Yeah, he's been living rent free in a lot of teams' heads this year." also like the moment after the game where he spoke to that poor Port supporter kid who's crying his heart out and reminded us all of every terrible Richmond win where you're heartbroken and you know you're not playing until next year. But then Tommy just, you know, the people's champion, Victoria's champion, Australia's champion now, because obviously Port Adelaide will all be supporting us.
Mr. Football.
After that. Yep. He's just, Tommy consoled him because, you know, Tommy Lynch has perfected everything.
Yep. Yep, it was. Look, and And it just, all the noise from the crowd, it just didn't matter. I loved it. And I thought there was a contrast between the Port Adelaide players and coaches and their crowd, to be honest. You can't blame all their supporters, but I thought after the game there was an enormous amount of respect between the players. Ken Hinckley spoke really well in his press conference, and yeah, it was the supporters who were stayed around to boo Trent Cotchin off the ground after his 250th. Not winning at life.
No, that's pretty miserable to turn around like after an epic final to boo the other team off the ground. I've never done that in my life. And it's not like, you know, there was some dirty act in the game. It was just a hard fought game. I did enjoy, if you watch that footage of the team walking off, is a lot of the players were actually clapping back at the Port supporters and particularly Marbs. Marbs was just giving it to the Port supporters.
Oh, but I must say, living Marbs large, Marbs.
Yeah, Marbs and Caddy's cheerleading was elite. They were doing some very solid celebrating, some very solid congratulating.
I really enjoyed both Dimmer going over to hug the emergencies after the game, and then the players bringing them into the circle, like I think for the song. And
yeah, none of that holding the song up and refusing to start it till Oleg joined. I think it was Oleg, wasn't it? That was the
That was pretty great. That was a great moment. Reminisce of, you know, there are so many favourite moments from the 27 grand final, but one of my very favourites was the entire playing group holding up the song after the grand final to call Ivy into the circle, who'd already retired. And yeah, I saw Ivy looking on with pride last night, and yeah, what a group.
Nick, just sort of on this Port, like the sort of the Port booing us off just reinforced. By the way, did you notice, Nick, like rain was forecast all day in Port Adelaide, and like almost all the Port supporters wore these crappy see-through ponchos. Like, I know. Can no one in Port Adelaide afford like a proper rain jacket?
I wondered that as well.
Like, it's so weird.
Adelaide doesn't get a ton of rain, but.
Yeah. Now, Nick, I do have a serious question about Port, because obviously, you know, as you say, that you've been very magnanimous that that, you know, there was a lot of respect between the players, but you know, Port did trash talk us before the game, Hamish Hartland in particular. It's good I've remembered his name, because I really shouldn't.
It's good that you remembered he's still in the AFL.
Yes, which I didn't until he started trash talking Lynch. No, I must admit I saw him in a few Port games. Anyway, and you hear how awfully, like, you know, they threw a bottle at Tom Lynch after the game. You hear these stories of how awfully they treat our supporters when we're there. I mean, lots of people have horrible stories from the 14 final. Like they're pretty unlikable. Like, okay, they've got a lot of great players and a great coach, but they're pretty unlikable. And like, where are they now? Now that sort of our traditional rivals, two of our three great rivals are essentially irrelevant, and in Essendon's case, look like they might be irrelevant for another generation. So,
well, we'll get back to them.
So Collingwood is still an arch rival. Geelong are obviously an arch rival. Is it Geelong, Collingwood, Port are now our three most bitter rivals?
Well, if you look at recent history, this whole decade, it's probably been our most competitive rivalry. It'd be one of the ones where we're closest to 500 over a sustained period. We've just had a lot of really competitive games against them. They've had some good wins, but you know, we had Dimmer's first win. I think it was round 7 last year was a great win. So yeah, it's a really competitive matchup. West Coast, if we'd played them a bit more, might be eligible for that. But It's a we've never played them when it counts. Yeah, certainly. And Port Adelaide had six players over 30s, but they've got some good youngsters. They're not going anywhere.
No. Anyway, I look forward to next time they play at the G in front of our mob.
Yeah, they had Lever play at the G.
That's true. for good reasons.
Well, two times in the last 10 times we've played them. But
now, is there any individual players that you want to talk about, Nick, that we haven't touched on yet?
I wanted to mention Dion Prestia. I thought, he's not at peak form or fitness, but he's going pretty well.
Yeah, equal team leading 11 contested possessions.
Mm. I thought Port put a lot of work into Basher Hooley after he was good last week, and I thought he was a bit down. I thought.
Well, both Short and Hooley did struggle a bit. They were both below their. I mean, Hooley bumped more so, but they were both below their usual possession averages. But yeah, like it was part of that. Like we didn't switch at all during the game.
Mm.
Like it was we down the lineup. We played possession. Wow. We just
it's such a narrow ground. It is hard. I thought.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, please don't get me wrong in saying I'm criticizing it all, but like it's a harder game for those kind of players, right?
Mm. It is definitely. And I thought after the first quarter we defended the switch. First quarter and a half, I thought we defended the switch very well as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And guess who the fourth rated player on the ground was on Champion Data? It's just not. Look, it's Rioli, who, by the way, had six tackles, a very high amount of pressure acts, only 16 overall, 13 touches overall. But just important around the ground and, one goal assist. No goals, obviously. Very, very solid game.
Yeah, I thought he was really important. Just covered a ton of territory. I don't know if we mentioned Dylan Grimes. He was very good as well. Baker's clean hands. You almost want to go through all 22. We didn't have any passengers. Some players played better than others. Bolton had a nearly night, but so proud.
Yeah, it was one of the points actually that like they let Bolton have far too good a shot late in the fourth quarter. You might remember it was obviously left, in fairness, but like Bolton will kick that quite often. And sort of that moment, I was watching the replay, I thought, yeah, we really had them. Like, it would have been a travesty. Look, they had periods of dominance in other parts, but like in the last 10 minutes, we were owning that game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We should have made it more comfortable than it was. But
we should have, could have, would have, and won, and we did.
Such a relief. So yeah, it was a great game. It was an emotional game, and I love sharing it with the other Richmond supporters as well. With Victoria on lockdown, it feels like there's quite a community that's sprung up. And actually, I wanted to shout out Ryan, who for a number of years ran the, I think performed a community service, it's fair to say, with the Days Since Essendon won a final Twitter account. So actually, I wanted to do a little quiz for you, Andy, to finish the show.
Oh, yes. And by the way, can I just say... Ryan is a lovely guy, and I've heard so many other Richmond supporters who he brings people together. He's one of the many great pillars of the Richmond community. Great bloke. Anyway, sorry, Nick, I interrupted.
So, look, the headline number has always been the 6,260 days it is now since Essendon's last won a final. But how many days do you think it is since Essendon was last top of the ladder?
Oh, Teutonic.
2,669, the round six, 2013, before, you know, things all started to go a bit astray. The numbers are going to get smaller from here. How many days do you think it is since an Essendon player last asked to leave the club?
Ooh, it would be less than seven, surely.
It's seven exactly. There's been four of them, so it's been hard to keep up.
I guess they got in so early with it that, it's, you know, like, to be clear, I don't like your club. You're terribly run. I would rather play for anyone else. So just so we're clear, I just want to get that early before the trade spirit. Like, they could, like, have you ever seen a team where so many players have transparently wanted to leave? Like, even when the Suns were awful, like, you know, a lot of players would sort of, like, at least be sort of subtle about the fact that they were desperate to be on the next flight back to Melbourne.
And, you know, Brisbane in the bad old days, there was always an element of go home about it, and there is with Fantasia, but Victorian players wanting to move into state to get away from the club.
Joe Danaher has pretty much burnt the Essendon jumper on Twitter, in case anyone missed the point.
How many days is it since an article was written about Essendon that had the word crisis in it?
Oh, two?
Nailed it. How many days is it since Stephen Dank was the subject of criminal proceedings in a court of law?
Oh, this happened this week, didn't it? So, like, four?
Yeah. Facing a series of charges in Darwin for his work at an anti-aging clinic. And charged with, among other things, fraud and a number of other charges related to his treatment of patients. So,
Ooh, who would have thought? I hope he kept good records.
So, look, shout out to...
The only thing you missed there, Nick, was a day since Agent DeRoto said something, made a preposterous trade demand.
Oh, yes, that's a feature, it's another bug of trade period. Yes.
It's like, as I said before, mentioned Danaher, them trying to play hardball. Oh, we want more than a first round pick. Like, Brisbane aren't going to give you anything. Like, they don't have to. He's a restricted free agent. You can keep him if you want, but he hates your club. And like, he's not that good, and he's not that good because you stuffed his injury. Anyway, sorry, we're getting off the point. This is not a podcast about Joe Danaher, but I am enjoying Essendon's delusion and the fact that everyone in the football industry knows that Joe Danaher wants to leave and they're still pretending like they can keep him. Like, Brisbane aren't idiots. They hear the same thing. If we know it, Brisbane know it. Anyway, sorry, Nick.
Anyway, yeah. So shout out to Ryan. Shout out to all the Tiger fans in wherever you are in this super weird year. Super proud of our team. I'm Nick.
Hang on, Nick, we just should mention we'll do a previous show later in the week.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Might try to get on a few guests. And, go Tigers. Can't wait. We've recorded this before the Geelong Brisbane game, so we don't know who we're playing, but we're looking forward to finding. Before we go, Nick, do you have a preference for who you want to play?
Oh, look, I just want a brutal game with lots of injuries.
That's fair. I reckon we'd be favourites against both teams.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Tool.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. This time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! What a siren! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your arse!
Oh, gee whiz. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, it was all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella.
so far this year.
Make it five out of six. The skipper goes and goes and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't.